It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Brett Baer's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Brett Baer.
Over the weekend, the Islamic Republic of Iran launched a brazen attack on Israel. Though a majority of the more than 300 armed drones and missiles were shot down or failed to launch before they reached land, the attack marks the first time Iran has launched a full-scale assault on Israel, despite more than 4 decades of hostilities. As Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu weighs his response to the attack, President Biden has reinforced his support for Israel, though vowing to continue to support the country militarily and urging some caution about how the response goes forward.
The United States is committed to Israel's security. We're committed to a ceasefire that will bring the hostages home and preventing conflict from spreading beyond what it already has.
Meanwhile, in New York, jury selection continues in former President Donald Trump's historic criminal trial as he faces 34 charges of paying for an adult film star to not tell the story of an alleged affair before the 2016 election. To discuss all of this and more, we bring in our panel, Wall Street Journal editorial board member Bill McGurn, Fox News Radio political analyst Josh Krasauer, and Democratic strategist Leslie Marshall. Josh, let me start with you. While all of this is going on, there is some turmoil over in the House of Representatives, and we've said that a lot in this GOP-controlled House with a very slim majority. House Speaker Mike Johnson has decided to move forward 4 spending bills, one on Israel, one on Ukraine, one on Taiwan, and another one that includes a possible ban or restriction on TikTok. That is not going over well in the caucus, to the point where another member, Congressman Massey, has said, I'm going to join Marjorie Taylor Greene and say Mike Johnson should no longer be Speaker. What about this and the way forward as this kind of chaos moves forward?
Well, Brett, it exposes what's long been one of the bigger headaches within the Republican caucus. We've seen divisions over a whole host of ideological issues, but one of the most messy ones is trying to get Republicans to support funding for Ukraine's defense against Russia. And that is just the sort of it splits the party. You have prominent senators like J.D. Vance in the Senate and a whole lot of rank and file lawmakers, Marjorie Taylor Greene, among the most prominent, who might even defenestrate Mike Johnson if he pushes ahead as he's looking like he's doing with these 4 separate spending bills for foreign aid. Look, this is going to be a real test of the Republican Party and whether it can come together and govern. That's one of the big tests for the party heading into an election year. I thought the meeting event that Johnson had with Trump was actually an encouraging sign that that there could be sort of a unification. And even though there were disagreements between Trump and Johnson on some of these issues, that the party could come together. But boy, just takes a few outspoken critics, a few Republicans to really scuttle the best laid plans of Speaker Johnson, and his speakership is now really very much on the line.
If your majority is fewer than 5, Bill, it's 1, pretty tough to govern, and 2, you're always kind of tiptoeing through the tulips here. It seems like Speaker Johnson is trying to plow through this, maybe even with the help of Democratic votes, who there are lawmakers who say the Democratic leaders are prepared to save Johnson if that moves forward, which is kind of unique.
Well, they should be prepared to save him if they're serious about the bills, the aid to Ukraine, Israel, and so forth. I think the speaker has to decide what's most important to him. And as you point out, when the majority shrinks, that shrinking margin of people get more power, you know, over the whole party, the few that could be the decisive vote. But I think he has a card in his hand, too. And I don't think those people really want another speaker crisis. I don't think they'll pull that card out. They don't really want him to resign. They want to be able to bully and threaten him. And he has to decide what will he stay for and what would he rather leave for. And I think he takes a principled position. I'm encouraged by the different things he has planned going forward. I hope they work out. And he should be prepared to resign, say, okay, you don't support me, good luck.
Because the bottom line is we're, you know, as the House is up for election every 2 years, Leslie, chaos does not sell. It does not bode well for saying that you can control your conference, you can get things done, that you could pass bills.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican and how much, you know, you're liked or disliked, you know, either you can move things along or you can't. When you look at more than half a dozen bills that should have been easily passed along party lines with a procedural vote that he couldn't get that, now you're looking at a fight within a fight, right? I mean, he's already leaving open the possibility that the bills could ultimately be packaged together. That would set up a potential fight with the right of the right flank of the right Republicans with that slim majority. Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, he's a hardline conservative. He initially expressed support for this approach specifically to foreign aid, but now he's pushing back because he says Israel funding should not be held hostage by Ukraine funding. And I quote there, you know, if you can't get one bill on one issue over the finish line, without the amount of chaos that we saw with FISA as an example, I don't see how this is going to be possible, whether you have 4-3, 4-2, 4-1, or separated all 4-4. And I think he's opening himself to further chaos. And to your point, Brett, that's not good for a speaker. It's not good for a party, especially with a general election coming up.
But Leslie, how about Democrats and what they're thinking? Hakeem Jeffries, because on one sense, politically, he has to be licking his chops, saying chaos doesn't sell, and that the more they, you know, step on themselves, the better that is for me to make the case for Democrats to take control of the House in November. On the flip side, he wants those bills. He wants the Ukraine funding. He wants the funding for, you know, Taiwan and $6 billion in building subs. He wants Democrats, I'm not sure, they're kind of split on Israel funding, but many of them do want funding for Israel, especially after the weekend and what happened with Iran. Leslie, so what do you think is going through the Democrat leadership mind on saving Johnson or not, and saving these bills or not?
It is a difficult decision, but I think at the end of the day, especially Hakeem Jeffries, who I have great respect for, he's going to do not what's in the best interest of winning, and not even in the best interest of the party, but in the best interest of the American people and those voters that, you know, voted him and the other Democrats on my side of the aisle into office. We saw that with FISA, right? I mean, when people say, oh, wait a minute, Democrats initially lined up and weren't going to save Johnson. But, you know, Hakeem Jeffries did say that he was open to a change with a two-year deal. And that's what ended up passing. You know, that's what you saw, you know, so many Democrats voting for and Republicans as well, you know, working together. And that's, you know, really how this is supposed to be done. So I certainly there are issues when you speak about the funding to Israel, right? The far left flank of my party, you know, definitely has an issue with that. They, you know, want a ceasefire, the list goes on. But when it comes, especially to the funding for Ukraine, you know, I don't think he's going to look to sink the leadership of Johnson over preserving an ally in the world like Ukraine and the needs that they have financially, militarily, and that takes money as well, to fight for freedom, which we certainly back, not just we as Democrats, we as Americans.
Yeah. And Josh, there is, you know, this split when it comes to Israel, and it's very public. I don't know what the percentage is on the left where, you know, they're anti-Israel or anti the situation in Gaza specifically, but the protests have been very public. And it is interesting to see how the administration has tried to tiptoe through this rhetorically when it comes to the politics of this moment. We don't know what Israel is going to do yet, but we do expect them to do something in response to this attack.
Yeah, the Biden administration has played this very cautiously. Now, it was a major success story over the weekend where the U.S. and other allies of Israel helped knock down these ballistic missiles and drones, which was an extremely successful defensive effort. But the White House is also using that success to sort of pressure Israel not to attack Iran on its soil, to kind of de-escalate the situation, trying to caution Israel to kind of take things a little lower key and not ramping things up, even though Iran is responsible, not just for the attacks over the weekend, but for the proxy attacks that have been threatening Israel, even predating October 7th. So this is a sort of a behind the scenes debate. I think the more politically risky issue for Democrats, though, is the fact that you have this left wing, as you alluded to, Brett, with these protests, even some that like embrace Iran and Hamas at some of these rallies, shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge, shutting down airports. This is the far left of the Democratic Party. You've got about 30 House Democrats that have said that they don't want to support aid to Israel as part of that the pro-Israel spending bill. And this is, you know, a group that Biden and certainly Democrats in Congress have been pandering towards. It's part of the party's coalition, a lot of young voters and a lot of left-wing voters that have very critical views towards Israel, to put it mildly. So politically, it's a real headache. We've been seeing that for the last 6 months or so. But for Biden to win re-election, for Democrats to be successful in these key congressional races, they need a win over the left, but the left has diametrically opposed views on Israel than most of the rest of the party.
Panel, we'll hold it right there.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Bill, usually elections come down to economics, how you feel about your own economic situation, maybe other issues. You know, we obviously see abortion playing a role in a number of states and nationally. Immigration, huge issue for not only border states, but other states. But we forget the importance of foreign policy and what it means, what it translates to about how people feel, if they feel safe. The Middle East is a tinderbox. China is a real question. Russia and Ukraine and whether Russia wants to expand beyond that is also a question. So that's going to linger probably in the months ahead of November.
Yeah, that's Joe Biden's problem. Look, he's had it since the fall of Afghanistan, you know, the fiasco we had getting out of there. And he's been plagued by a perception of weakness, exacerbated by his age and what people see on TV when they see him speaking and so forth. The demonstrations are really interesting. The ones yesterday and so forth across the nation. If you paid attention, there was a meeting on Saturday of demonstrators from all progressive groups, but they were under the banner of pro-Palestinian liberation. They were meeting in Chicago. They made clear Joe Biden is the enemy. They are not people who can be persuaded. And I'm surprised that Joe Biden hasn't used them to build his support with mainstream Democrats and the American people. I don't think they're sympathetic. Leave Gaza aside. When you block a bridge, you know, or inconvenience people every day, interrupt a Christmas tree lighting ceremony, people don't like you. They're not trying to persuade people. And they make clear they're going to be at the convention and their only goal is to disrupt. I think they're an opportunity for Biden to come out strongly against them and shore up his support and his party otherwise for Democrats who do support Israel, who are, conventional Democrats and so forth. I don't know why he hasn't done it. They're kidding themselves if they think these people are persuadable. They want to create mayhem, and they've succeeded, and I think they're going to get bigger. And one last point. In 1968, the last time the convention was in Chicago, or one of the last times, Hubert Humphrey went into that convention, and he was stuck. He was essentially a dove on Vietnam, but he had been selling the war for LBJ for 3 years. So he's personally split. And he had anti-war demonstrators on the outside and his convention on the inside. It was a disaster. And the result in the election was people perceived Humphrey as a candidate of more war. Nixon ran as the guy who would bring, quote, an honorable end to the war. Now, unlike Donald Trump, he didn't promise to do it in 24 hours. But it sounds very familiar to today.
Yeah. On the flip side, to what we were talking about earlier, Leslie, you know, chaos does not sell. People like stability. They like, you know, knowing what's going to happen. They have some sense of security in that. Chaos outside the Democratic Convention in Chicago could be a tough sell, too.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I agree with some of what Bill's saying. Look, I've always said that, you know, like the day after the election, when hundreds of thousands of people protested that Donald Trump won the election, if you looked at the man on the street interviews and they said, you know, who did you vote for? So many people, especially young people, would say, oh, I didn't vote. And I'm sorry, am I allowed to say this? I wanted to slap them. And the reason I say that is I can't stand when, you know, you view a problem, you have a solution, especially when it's as easy as voting, and then you complain after the fact. With regard to the protests, I love our country. But First Amendment's my favorite, you know, of our amendments in the Constitution. And it's so wonderful that we have that freedom. But if you don't do it properly, it really can damage the cause more than help it. We've seen it on the right with election deniers or supporters of January 6th. We've seen it on the left in my party most recently before this, you know, the pro-Palestinian with climate and, you know, climate change. If you're going to disrupt traffic, if you're going to anger a lot of people, I agree with Bill, they're going to be angry at you. It doesn't get you to your goal. What does? I also want to agree with Bill with something else, but not in the way he meant it, I'm sure. I do think President Biden needs to speak to these people. The overwhelming majority of people who are pro-Palestine or pro-ceasefire, they're certainly not pro-Hamas. Nobody in America should be, and nobody human being should be pro-Hamas or any other terrorist
organization.
But we
did see Hamas flags and Hamas chants and all that
stuff. Right, but that's not the, yes, and that's disgusting. That's not the majority.
I'd say in Chicago, they were teaching, there was a breakaway session to teach people how to say death to America. So
no, I understand that. And we also saw on January 6th a guillotine. And we also saw t-shirts that 6 million were not enough, referring to the Jews killed in the Holocaust. My point being that that's not the majority of people. You know, that is not the sentiment of the majority of people. But to your point, Bill, with regard to the president, you know, Joe Biden needs to stand up and talk about, well, if you don't get me, this is who you're going to get. Because Donald Trump is not pro two-state solution. Donald Trump is not going to have a ceasefire. And then that's the reality. They have a choice between Joe Biden, Donald Trump, and staying home. I mean, that's really what it is at the end of the day. But again, back to the protest. If you do, I don't care what your issue is. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. If you're going to anger a lot of people, it's not getting you to your goal. It gets your picture in the paper for being arrested. It gets people angry. It does get you the headline. It does not get you to your toward your goal. Voting does, and affecting those who are elected does, because only with legislation or only with who is elected president can that get you to your goals, specifically with this issue, a ceasefire in Gaza.
Last thing, Josh, the former president, this historic criminal trial, first the former president to face a criminal trial. It is now jury selection. He's required to be there. Other than picking the jurors, there isn't a lot of news other than the back and forth with the judge about the gag order and what the former president says or doesn't say. There was a dust up that he fell asleep and reporting on that and what that really meant. You know, we covered it and we've covered the trial from its beginning, its origin. But there's all this dust up that, you know, we weren't spending enough time on the former president's trial. It is jury selection currently, and there is the possibility of World War III, and it seems like there's a lot of things going on that maybe the developments inside that courtroom are not the most pressing thing. Well, how do you think that sits with the American voter in that trial? And, you know, we haven't even gotten to the meat of it.
Well, as far as the big picture goes, Brett, I do think that when we look at the November election, whether the world is in chaos and if we have a war in the Middle East that has appeared possible over the past weekend, that's going to have a lot more to do with Biden's success than with all the machinations right now in this first trial that Trump is facing in New York. Look, it's a historic trial, a trial of a sitting or a former president. Not a whole lot of news made yet. I think politically, Brett, the story is that when Trump is front and center in the news, his poll numbers tend to trickle down just a little bit, not significantly, but he benefits when Biden and the state of the economy, the state of inflation, the border, chaos in the world. Whenever Biden is front and center, that's good news for President Trump. Trump doesn't want the trial to be the biggest news story. Heading into the fall tends to be bad for his political numbers. So look, attacking a judge over the gag order, that's not a great look. Those are the types of things that remind voters that Trump, maybe they like the policies, but his personal conduct is something that is not a positive for him. And the less seen, the better, probably, for the former president.
Yeah. And I just want to, you know, cover all our bases about covering every element of this trial. Potential juror, seat number 4, B269, is a man who lives originally from North Carolina. He lives in Manhattan. He's an attorney, civil litigator, married with 2 children. His wife is in risk management at a bank, likes to spend time outdoors with his kids, gets news from The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, New York Post, and The Washington Post, and looks like he may make the cut. So just play by play there. So we have complete coverage of every element. Final word on this, Bill. How much impact does it make?
Yes, I think it will have an effect. It's obviously a big trial, but probably not the effect that Alvin Bragg intended. I think it's embarrassment the way they trumped up this misdemeanor whose statute of limitations has expired to come up with 34 felonies. And I think Trump's going to play the sympathy card. And the two sides are so polarized, a lot of people will be with him on this.
Could it hurt Democrats, Leslie?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, honestly, it's going to hurt Donald Trump either. I really don't, because it's not a number. It's not a very even top 10 issue for voters. And certainly not the voters that matter. Remember, the people that are going to vote for Donald Trump, they love him and they're going to see him as a victim. And, you know, the people on my side of the aisle were terrible and we're going after him. And, you know, Democrats just already see, you know, him. You know, Josh said something, what the trial will show. And you keep saying a word over and over, Brett, that is, I think it's going to come down to it for the handful of states and the sliver of voters. And that is whether or not they want chaos. And the only way that could hurt Donald Trump is if they view what's going on in the trial as chaos. I just don't think voters are going to be tuned in to it for that to make a difference like that.
All right, panel. Thanks so much. Little history now. On April 14th, 1910, President William Howard Taft threw out the first pitch at a Major League Baseball game. The 27th president grew up a fan of the sport, was the first in a long line of presidents to receive this athletic honor, throwing out the pitch ahead of a game between the Washington Senators and the Philadelphia Athletics at the time in Washington, D.C. Since then, the presidential pitch has become a longstanding tradition in Major League Baseball, with nearly every president since Taft stepping up to the plate one time or another to show their love for the cherished American sport. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Leslie, Josh, and Bill, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Thank you. from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.